Happy holidays, Jen.
Thank you, Sarah. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
It is a couple weeks before Christmas in our life right now, but this episode will drop on Christmas Day.
Yep.
December 25th, for those of you who celebrate, Merry Christmas. For those of you who don't, enjoy your day off.
Movie theaters are open everywhere, everybody.
Yeah. If you work in a movie theater, we're sorry.
I know it's true.
But you know what? I had a friend in high school who worked in a movie theater, and he used to really love it. So maybe people who work in movie theaters are happy. I don't know. If you work in a movie theater, let us know what you think about working on Christmas Day.
For real.
Are movie theaters open 365 days a year? Like, can you go to the movies on New Year's Day?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Wild. I don't like it, honestly.
I do, because I like to go to the movies.
On Thanksgiving.
We've never gone to a movie on Thanksgiving, but we have gone to a movie on Christmas before.
I feel like Thanksgiving is the day that they would be closed if they were going to be closed on a day.
I mean, it just takes so long to cook all that dinner.
All right, fair enough. So, Jen, what are we doing? Oh, wait. Welcome, everyone, to Fated Mates.
Yes, Fated Mates holiday style.
Mm-hmm. Cue the bells.
Carol of the bells.
All the bells.
Yes, they're silver bells. It's Christmas time in the city.
Jingle bells. And my favorite Christmas song, which is the Pogues' Fairy Tale of New York, which is real grim, you guys. It should give you a sense of how much what I think about the holidays, that is my favorite Christmas song, although it is like a bananas great love story.
I don't think I've ever heard this song.
Yes, you for sure have.
I could have been someone.
Well, so could anyone. You took my dreams from me when I first found you.
I kept them with me, babe. I put them with my own. Can't make it all alone. I built my dreams around. Christmas Day.
Nice. Well, my favorite Christmas song is probably any version, really, of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
So have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
Oh, it's so bright.
Well, but there's the sad version.
Someday soon, we all will be together. If the fates allow. Until then, we'll have to muddle through somehow.
Oh,
and then like a medium version.
Well, if you don't like the epic love story of two Irish drunks in New York City that the Pogues deliver, my second favorite Christmas song is the Bare Naked Ladies Sarah McLachlan version of God Rest You Merry Gentlemen.
Which oh, yeah, is sure. That's real peppy.
Real peppy.
God rest you merry gentlemen. God rest you merry gentlemen.
I have a Spotify playlist of Christmas songs, and it's a lot of like R&B, like Mariah Carey, and the Carol of the Bells by Destiny's Child is like
ding dong ding dong, ding dong ding dong, ding dong ding dong, ding dong ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong.
Oh, I mean, well, because their voices are bells, right? So it's real good.
Yeah, that's nice.
It is nice.
I find that I really like, I'm not wild about the holiday, but I do like the music that comes with it.
Oh, yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah. My husband always makes fun of me because he's like, are you going to start listening to Christmas music? Are you listening to your car already? And I'm like, shut up, Daryl.
You can't tell me what to do.
You can't stop me.
I mean, I gotta say, like, every year I say, like, I'm ready to start, and then I listen to Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree and Bam. Santa Baby and yeah. Baby It's Cold Outside, which I know a lot of people think is problematic, but we're gonna put in show notes a very feminist take on Baby It's Cold Outside.
All right, I'm here for it.
That's real sex positive.
There you go.
And actually relevant to romance, because the whole premise of this whole the theory that this writer and critic is proposing is that it has to feel like a little sketchy for her to be okay with what she wants that night.
Interesting. All right. I'm excited to read that.
Similar to early romances. Yeah. Anyway, so it's 4.5 minutes in. We promised ourselves we'd do this fast. What are we doing?
We're going to each just talk about a Christmas novella that we loved this year. And because it's Christmas Day, I think we're going to actually stick to Christmas stories. Although there have been a lot of great, really a Hanukkah anthology came out this year, a new one. Mm-hmm. So we'll link to that in show notes. And a literally 5 seconds ago, Roan Parish dropped a short story onto Book in Maine called A Good Old Fashioned Hanukkah Pegging.
Starring,
I know, the characters from Small Change, I think, because it's nice. Ginger and Christopher. So, hello.
Thanks, Roan.
I started reading it and then was like, shit, I gotta record, but already real good.
And also we, like, did a drive-by with Mangoes and Mistletoe
yes.
by friend of the pod, Adriana Herrera.
Which was fantastic.
Last time in our, what was that on? Best of the year list. So
yeah.
We're going to skip that. We've got two new novellas that all two listeners.
It's more than that, Sarah.
That you guys may have already read, but we've certainly not talked about them.
Okay. So why don't I go first? I'm going to go first. So
go.
I'm going to talk about a novella from the Karina Dirty Bits line, which I wanted to tell you, everybody, they really deliver what they're promising, which is pretty much like real quick and compact, but like real fiery. Mm-hmm. And this.
Did you say thick?
No, fiery. I said fiery.
Fiery and compact?
I don't know what I said.
I thought you said thick.
Well,
I imagine it's Christmas Day, so.
I have no idea what I said. I was rushing everybody. Oh. I'm going to talk about a book called Love in the Stacks by...
Oh, you love it.
I do love it, by Delilah Peters. This is so on brand for me. It's two librarians.
Sex in a library.
It's like my dream. Okay, fine. Too much information. It's Delilah Peters is the author, and there are two... Poppy is a librarian in this New Bedford library, and... Ben is the new archivist, and
Betty archives something. Ooh-hoo.
He works, you know, downstairs in some little basement dwelling that he just, like, there's literally a part where he's, like, pulling out, like, Civil War teeth out of a drawer. I don't really know what that's symbolic of, but she, so
Civil
what
Civil War teeth?
I
don't like the idea of teeth in my library, but okay. If you're a librarian, be in her books.
Yeah.
Do teeth in your library.
Okay,
Steve,
maybe
down.
You could have Steve. He's
Steve,
an actual archivist.
In your library.
I'll be like, Steve, are there teeth in your library? Okay, anyway, here's the setup. It's Christmas Eve, and the staff of the library have a party at noon, and then the newest hires have to stay until 8 o'clock to close the library, and they don't want to close the library too soon because sometimes, like, people that are lonely come in. So the librarians are doing, like, a community service.
Aww.
Well, earlier that day, Poppy and Ben, like, have, like, make out in his little archivist room, and it's real hot. And then they're the two newest hires, so they're going to be there at night. And then a storm rolls in. And it's too slick and slippery outside for them to get home safely.
There's only one circulation desk.
That That is, in fact, exactly at one. There's only one counter in the break room. There's only one couch. These, I would like you to know that Poppy and Ben take this charge of having sex in the library very seriously. And they do it all over, and it's effing great. And it is exactly what you want from your Christmas novella, which apparently, based on all these Hallmark movies y'all are talking about, it's like, we kiss once and we know we're in love forever. And Poppy and Ben are like, no, we are going to bone through 79% of this little Karina Dirty Bits short story. And that is how we will know we are in love forever. And I think they're doing it better.
I love it.
It's delightful.
A plus from us.
A plus.
I'm going to read that tonight.
Yes, you are. You're not going to be disappointed at all.
Yay. Well, mine is also There's Only One, but in my case, it's a bed. But it's also There's Only One Man, because it begins as a lesbian, a female-female romance. It's Sierra Simone's Red and White, which is a Snow White and Rose Red retelling.
Nice.
And it's in the Hot for the Holidays anthology, which for a while was free, but shouldn't be because it's great. So
is this the one? I feel like I downloaded this and I maybe read the first one.
I will tell you who the first one is.
Is it by Helena Hunting and LJ Shen? Oh, no, this is different.
No, this is Marie Force's first.
Mine is in a holiday anthology called Christmas in the City, which also has a Sierra Simone and Kennedy Ryan
writing together.
Right.
Short. Well, no, this is Red and White, a Snow White and Rose Red retelling. And now we don't have to tell you how much we love Sierra Simone on this podcast. I don't have to tell you how much I love her writing. Frankly, if you haven't read anything by her by now, then I don't know what you're doing listening to us.
Exactly.
So
the wrong podcast, everybody.
With love. So, but what you do need to know is that when Sierra decides that she's just going to write like a super short, super hot sex story, she can deliver. So
I'm downloading this right now as we speak.
It begins with two best friends, Snow and Scarlett, who have like been there. They are graduate students, and they're not best friends, but they're close friends. And they're in Montana at a cabin that is owned by one of their parents, in like a snowy, and there's like a blizzard outside, and it's just the two of them. And you're in Scarlett's point of view, and she's like, she's polyamorous, and like she's had a crush on Snow, like it's friends to lovers, and you're like, these two are fine. And she's like, we're finally gonna do it. I'm pretty sure she's into me. Is she into me? I'm into her. Like, I don't want to mess this up. And so there's this whole like, you know, she's very much in her head, and then suddenly Snow just goes for it, and they're making out, and boom, the door opens, and in comes what is described as a bear. Like a very furry, snowy, massive creature comes in, and they're like, oh my God, it's a bear. They're screaming. And then Scarlett's very noble and says, like, Snow, go into the bedroom. I'll take care of it. And then the bear speaks and says,
hi, my name is Teddy Ruxpin. Can you and I be friends?
Like, basically says, like, save me or something, and then passes out.
Mm.
It's not a bear. Spoiler. It's a dude.
It's never a bear.
And his name is Liam, and he's a real bear. So they have to get him naked because they don't want him to die of hypothermia.
Of course not. What else are they supposed to do?
It's just good sense. Oh, God. And you know what, guys? I don't really feel like I need to say much more.
I think we all know about, yes.
It's a magnificent polyamory story where they end up using the only one bed and falling madly in love and living happily ever after.
I mean, this is all I want from my Christmas romances.
And I love it a whole lot. So there it is, 13 minutes in. We gave you two novellas. You're going to read them both in one night.
Yeah,
you're going to be so happy. Perfect, like when you're in-laws are bothering you, or your kids are screaming, or like everybody's
right
cranky, or like you just don't want to be at church anymore.
You watch one too many Hallmark like Christmas romances and actually need a little heat. Maybe.
We are here for you.
We're here for you.
Don't say that Jen and I didn't give you anything this year.
That's right. We did. I'm going to link in show notes to a piece I wrote a few weeks ago in for Kirkus about the forced proximity trope and only one bed. Mm-hmm. But we are also going to go ahead after this episode and replay our episode from last year, an interstitial on holiday romances that was actually pretty short. So maybe you've heard this before, but if you're a new listener, maybe you haven't. So stick around and have a great holiday and a happy new year.
Happy holidays, everyone. It's the holidays and yay.
We faded mates. Think that there's nothing quite as wonderful as a holiday romance, and there's so many to choose from.
And they're so much better than the actual holidays.
That's unfortunate, but true.
I'm a little grinchy. Little bit.
I'm a lot grinchy all the time.
Yeah, it's my birthday right around the holidays, too, so it's just a lot, man.
I love a holiday romance, though, so I think that we should talk about the good things.
Yes. I am a sucker for holiday romance because I think that there's something, the mythology of what a holiday should feel like that it should feel magical and like anything could happen is what makes these books so powerful, I think, because they play into that fantasy. And I think it actually gets more and more intense for me, that fantasy, as I get older and sort of see the way the sausage is made, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. Christmas became a lot less exciting once I realized that it was like about putting batteries in things. And I think that most Christmas romances and most holiday romances, really, if a battery appears, it's in someone's vibrator, and therefore for a better purpose.
Agreed. So do you want to start? Do you want me to start? What do you want to do?
Let me start, actually, because what you said about sort of like the way we used to think about sort of holidays when we were younger really strikes kind of one of the reasons I picked my first book, which is called A Wedding One Christmas. And the author's name is Therese Bahari. And she is someone I follow on Twitter. She's from South Africa. And I listened to someone pronouncing her name so I could make sure I was getting it right. So I hope I still did. But this is a great, I love this romance. It is, do you remember the movie Before Sunrise with Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy?
Yes, of course.
Okay, this book is the closest I have ever gotten to reading a book that captured the feeling of that movie for me.
Oh,
I know. And so
BRB, I'm going to download it. That's amazing.
So it all takes place in this one 24-hour period. And it's all talk, talk, talk. It's like kissing only. It's not like super off the chart sexy. It's just really intense emotionally. And what happens is Angie is driving back home to Cape Town after a couple of years away. Her father died and she like pretty much left immediately. She's really overcome with guilt for kind of like not sticking around to help her mom and her sisters, but it was just really emotionally fraught. And she stops in this little town that they used to go to as a family when she was younger, and she stumbles into this wedding where she unfortunately is wearing a dress that is very similar to the dress the bridesmaids are wearing. And so everyone is really pressuring her, like, go get in the photos. What are you doing? And she's horrified. And she like sort of like sneaks away and ends up in this little cafe where she meets our hero, whose name is Ezra. And he is actually like knows the people getting married, but because he has had a really disappointing he'd asked a woman to marry him and she turned him down. He like kind of can't bring himself to go to the wedding. And these two have this like intense kind of 24-hour period where they just like hang out and they go to this wedding and they get caught in like a Christmas parade. And the one of the funniest moments in this book for me is there's a part where the town has a like a nativity play, and they just pick randos like out of the crowd to play the parts. So there's no script or anything, and Angie gets picked to play Mary, and the guy who plays Joseph. And it reminded me of a book I loved as a kid, which was called The Greatest Christmas Pageant Ever. Did you read this?
No.
Okay, it's this. You should read it to your daughter.
I don't think so, at least.
It's this really funny story about these like bad kids in town who take over the town's Christmas pageant. But in this story, Angie gets up on stage and Joseph is like, I brought the wise men. And she's like, what's wrong with you? You're bringing strangers into the house. Like, I'm going to have a baby and you didn't even find a hotel room. And I was like, this is like the realest thing I have ever read. Like Mary giving Joseph a hard time for bringing in these strangers. Anyway, I just thought this book was so sweet and so charming and just really perfectly captures sort of the, I don't know, like our sadness and sorrow about our families and how hard it is to kind of face them around the holidays. And yet when you fall in love, you find the strength to like face those challenges. And I think it's delightful.
That sounds delightful. I haven't read that, but I'm going to. I'm going to download it for the holidays this year. Oh, is that a full-length book or is it a
novella? It is. It's the only one. And I want to talk about why so many of these stories are novellas, because I feel like it's sort of a struggle to find a full-length kind of Christmas-themed book or holiday-themed book.
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends, right? I think there are a lot of small town contemporary. I feel like every small town contemporary author has done her holiday novella or her holiday book. And most of them do them every year, right? Like there's a new holiday Christmas book by Debbie Macomber every year. But I do think that novellas lend themselves really well to the holidays, especially to Christmas, right? So but really to everything I think about, there was an anthology of, Hanukkah stories that came out a few years ago. I think there are a few things. One, I think novellas tend to really only work if the two people know each other at the beginning of the book. Right? So the holidays kind of lend themselves to that naturally because you're going to be like in a space with a family or with people who you know. And then, like I said before, there's this sort of magical influence, this kind of fated mates style experience where like these two people are thrust together at the holidays. And they already know each other, and maybe they hated each other, or maybe it's like best friend's older brother, or, you know, sister's best friend home from the holidays, or home for the holidays from school, like whatever it is. It sort of thrusts people into proximity. I think there are things like snowstorms that happen over the holidays traditionally that can lend themselves to this. But actually, the reason why I think holiday romances and holiday novellas are so perfect and why they work so well in short form is because traditionally, for those of us who do write romances regularly and long form romances regularly, a holiday novella is a place where we can give people a glimpse at the world that they have been seeing and maybe a character who wouldn't necessarily get a full book.
Oh, that's such a good point.
So I think the book that I want to talk about is an old school romance for me. So for the future, because I know I'm going to use this term over the course of, you know, the entire podcast. But for me, old school, when I say old school romances, I'm talking about romances that were written before the year 2000. And someday we can talk about why that's the year. I don't think it's arbitrary, but we'll get there sometime. Someday we'll talk about it. Maybe we'll do an old school interstitial.
Definitely. I would love that.
But since I was like 15 or 16, I have read this particular anthology called A Holiday of Love back in the day. Pocket, which is a division of Simon & Schuster, it would produce once a year a kind of four author anthology, and it was always at Christmas, and it always had like ivy or like, or holly or bells or something on the cover. And it had like Judith McNaught in like the biggest font possible. And Jude Devereaux in like the biggest font possible, or Linda Howard in the biggest font possible. And then it would sort of, then there would be two other authors who were either very well known and just not as huge as McNaught, Devereaux, Howard, or not well known at all. And it was sort of, the fourth author was usually very much not well known. And so it was really a way to boost her visibility for, in this particular case, historical romances. Anyway, A Holiday of Love does what I was talking about with these sort of favorite characters or favorite families. In this anthology, the story that I come to every year, the one that I come back for every year, there are two. And the first one is Judith McNaught's Miracles. Those of you who have heard me talk about old school romances or heard me talk about my influences as a writer know that McNaught is the sort of queen of my writing past. She's why I came to romance. She's why I loved romance. And when I write, I try very hard to channel the way she makes me feel in text. Miracles is also an epistolary love story.
Interesting.
Interestingly, not between the hero and heroine. The heroine is trying. She's young and she is supposed to be married, and she doesn't want to get married. And so she decides she's going to find somebody to help her ruin herself. And she finds this kind of rakish guy at a ball, at a holiday ball. And she intends to just ruin herself by like dancing three dances with him, or like drinking too much champagne and like going out onto the balcony with him, like just enough to make her no longer perfect. And he's so drawn to her, he ends up taking her back to his bedroom. And they have this like intense emotional moment, and somebody knocks on the door. And it's her mother. And her mother is like, you've been caught. You have to get married. Oops. And he is livid, livid, because he believes she's trapped him. She did this on purpose. And so he marries her. And then he brings her to his house in the country and leaves her there.
Oh, and I hate them. And I love those stories.
I know. He's so mad. And he leaves her there. And she's literally just there for like years. And then her grandmother, who she was very close to, dies, and she has is this, like, she writes letters to her grandmother just about like everything all day, because she has no friends, she's so lonely, like she's, her life is ruined. And then one day, like 5 or 6 days before Christmas, she receives news that he's coming for Christmas with his mother and father. And his mother's very sick. And her last wish before she dies is that, like, he, proof that he's happy. So he comes. It's a little bit of a fake relationship story, too, because he comes to the house for Christmas and basically says, you have to love me. You have to pretend that you love me for Christmas, the week. And they fake it in the moment in front of the parents. And it's all so wonderful. And he's like the most loving, like funny, clever, smart, sexy husband. And then the moment the parents leave the room, he just shuts it down and is cold as ice. And she's falling for him. She's falling for the person that he is in front of his parents. And it is devastating.
Oh, that sounds so good.
And also amazing.
Well, and I actually think a lot of novellas do have that fake engagement kind of angle, or the fake, right? Because you want to like sort of make your family happy. And it seems like the path of least resistance is to like sort of just give them the illusion of your happiness, right? So I also think that these stories really lend themselves sometimes to that plot as well. I can think of a bunch of them that have that. There's one, a great one by Cecilia Grant, a delightful Christmas novella called A Christmas Gone Perfectly Wrong, that sort of traffics in that same trope. Like in this case, they have to hide who they really are because they shouldn't be traveling together, and they are. So I think that that's another thing. Like sometimes these holiday novellas get like mashed up with this other really appealing trope of we are faking it for someone else so that they will believe that we are, that we're happy.
Sure. Well, there's also such a suspension of disbelief, right, that comes with the holidays. Like, when you write it allows all the tropes, all the, like, sticky, delicious tropes that we're going to talk about over the course of this podcast, you know, to be sort of elevated and heightened to this fever pitch. And then you set it against a holiday where, you know, there is a sort of sense of magic happening potentially.
Yes.
And it makes it really special. I'm thinking about, there's a new anthology that's coming out the beginning of December. It'll be out when this podcast drops, called Reindeer Games, with Tracy Livesey and Charlotte Stein and Helen K. Diamond and Eve Dangerfield and Andy Christopher and Adriana Anders, like, huge names in the genre. Tamara Lush, Kelly Mayer, and the conceit is at every single one of these stories is a Snowden story.
That's amazing. I mean,
we love Snowden stories because it's forced proximity and, you know, it's a magnificent way of keeping two people on the page and really forcing them to fall in love fast. So again, romance novellas. Also, you can't deny the fact that novellas are easier for the holidays because people are very busy. And so, like, it's a quick read.
Well, and that reminds me, one of my favorite anthologies is, it's called Silver Bells. And what I like about it is all of the characters are over 40. And they're not all Christmas stories either. One of my favorites in the anthology is called A Taste of Blessings by Suleika Snyder. And it is the story of, and I love sort of a, like, I went back home. And my, you know, the main character, Tia, sort of goes back to suburban Ohio and her family. Family's so disappointed in her. How come she's the age she is and she still isn't married? And she, you know, sort of hits it off with this man at, like, you know, this like a kind of a really big, overwhelming Bengali holiday event. So in that case, it's not like Snowden. It's not the trope that it has in common, but rather that all of the characters aren't 25, or that they're, you know, older people that are still finding love. And I really like that, too.
I'm so glad that you brought something up that's not Christmas, because I think for sure most of the holiday romances that we talk about are Christmas. And that's just because, you know, romance. But there are, and also because there are so few, there are very few holiday romances that fall on non-religious holidays, too. And I really love Tiffany Rice's Her Naughty Holiday. Tiffany wrote for Harlequin Blaze, I think it's a trilogy. I think it's Halloween,
it's
Thanksgiving,
amazing.
Christmas, right?
Yes,
or is it,
it is.
Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's. I don't know, but
it's Halloween,
right?
Yeah.
And this one is the Thanksgiving one, and it's real great, you guys. I read it, I don't know when it came out, but I read it after the election, so it might have been 2017 that I read it. But so the heroine is just miserable about Thanksgiving. Like, she doesn't want to deal with her crazy family. She she knows that the moment everybody sits down around the table, like, she is going to, it is going to immediately be, it's, her name is Clover, and it's immediately going to be like the sort of, like, let's talk about everything that is bad about Clover moment. And, like, who among us has not dreaded that meal?
Absolutely.
And so she's basically like, I'm going to bring home a fake boyfriend. This goes back to the fake relationship story, right? I'm going to bring home a fake boyfriend and he's going to help me sort of sort this out. And so she brings home this, like, hot contractor, like a hot, like, he, like, is a construction worker and he's, like, delicious.
And he's, like, basically a single father to his daughter, right?
Yeah. And like, he's pretty much like, okay, that's fine, but we have to bone. In classic Tiffany fashion, he's like, I will come and be your perfect, like, boyfriend, but we're going to bone later.
A lot of boning in classic Tiffany fashion.
A lot of it. Like, this is a Blaze book, but it could have been significant. It could have not been a Blaze book. It could have been, you know, whatever's bigger than Blaze, hotter than Blaze.
Inferno. I would like to have a job naming the lines, right?
Inferno.
Harlequin Inferno.
You know, it's funny. Something we should do, you know, we should also do like a category day, because I
would be
so many category romances that I adore, and I don't feel like they ever get the attention that they deserve.
I'm going to put it on the list right now.
Do it right now. But basically the best part about this, and, you know, the joy of this book, there are a lot of things to love about this book. Again, it's like, if fake engagement is your kink, this is here. If Tiffany's sexy parts are your kink, this is here. But what I love about this, this Thanksgiving dinner, she just kicks everyone out because they're all being assholes. And she's just like, I don't want to deal with you anymore. And like, there is a moment while you're reading it where you're thinking, wait, is this a thing we can do?
Yes. Absolutely.
It's the most fantastical fantasy. Like, it is hotter than any other fantasy.
Yeah, yes,
I've ever read in a romance.
I could just make them all leave and be by myself on Thanksgiving.
This is a possibility. And then they bone.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So. And it's an amazing book, actually. It is fantastic. And actually, you know what? I wrote a whole, and I will put it in the show notes, a whole post for the Book Queen about, because I was like, no one ever writes Thanksgiving romances. And I did a ranking of like top Thanksgiving romances. And I'm pretty sure it was, I don't think it won. There was a very, but it was like one of my top two. So I will post that in the show notes so we can read about it.
This is why I'm so glad you and I are doing this, because like, I feel often, I read a book a day. Like, I feel like I have a really great overview of the genre, but like, I feel like you just are constantly recommending books to me that I have either never read or never heard of. Like, I can't think of another Thanksgiving romance.
I've read quite a few, so you'll be excited to read about them.
I will be.
Let me talk about one more novella, which I really loved. It's by Jenny Holiday, and it's called Merrily Ever After. And I want to talk about it's also about family, because in this novella, it's actually kind of the second part of a novella that started the story of Jay and Elise. And it's part of her Bridesmaids Behaving Badly series, which I stand for pretty much 24/7. Like, stop me on the street and ask me about a book and I might talk about Jenny Holiday. And I was really nervous about this book because the setup of their first novella, which was called Once Upon a Bride, is that they meet and that Jay does not want to be a parent ever. And that she thinks she can't have kids. She has a really bad case of endometriosis, which is one of the few novels I can think of where like a woman's menstrual cycle plays such a huge role. And it's like such a big part of our lives, and it just isn't a big part of romance. And it's debilitating. And so she doesn't think she can ever get pregnant. So they get married and they're going to move on. And it's clear, though, that she really is sad about this, that she'll never be a mother. And she kind of keeps this from him because she thinks there won't ever be a chance. And I will tell you, I have a lot of friends who are like, I don't want to be a parent. And I was really dreading sort of some like a story where Jay like is suddenly fine with the thing that he'd spent his whole entire life thinking he didn't want to do. Right. So this book starts with her kind of miraculously becoming pregnant, and they're married. So it's also, I love a romance that deals with a couple who's already in a relationship facing a new challenge. And I really was kind of worried that I would think like, oh, this, it's just like magically fixed. And it didn't feel that way at all. I think that it really shows that like people change. That in a marriage, you're going to face an unexpected choice or crisis, or something's going to happen that you didn't expect to happen, and how you each deal with it and then how you deal with each other dealing with it is a really big part of believing that a couple can truly have an HEA. And I just thought this book was so wonderful. And the Christmas part is, you know, like that Elise just keeps like wishing that it would snow, that somehow like they'd, and you know what she's really wishing for is that like kind of magical dusting that's gonna like fix all this. But instead it's their like hard work and they're talking to their friends and their family that like helps them realize kind of the path forward. And I think it's, again, like one of those romances that's really like, this is what romance should do, like really show us people who, like, this is a real struggle between them. And yet, because they love each other, they are able to, like, move forward and find a way that they're both happy. But I was really happy as a reader, too, that it felt like Jay's sort of, like, he's like a real jerk at first, right? But you understand why and you're not mad at him. And then like the way they come around to like sort of figuring out how to be together. And I thought it was really wonderful.
I love that because I also think that, again, sort of going back to this idea of the holiday mythology, the holiday magic, being a part of a love story, it feels like it just adds another layer of, and of course they'll be happy together because it happened, you know, they did all this hard work and they fell for each other in this, you know, holiday moment, this in with this magic around them.
And we've talked about sort of like the baby epilogue, and this is like a baby epilogue that felt really qualitatively different than just like, and then they were happy with a baby. It was like, oh, now their lives are really going to change and that's going to mean something.
Well, I feel I should also say that I wrote a holiday book this year.
You should say that.
Another holiday anthology. I got together with three other incredible authors, Tessa Dare, Sophie Jordan, Joanna Shoup, and I just put out an anthology called How the Duke Stole Christmas, and we're very happy with it.
I read Joanna Shoup's story already.
It's awesome.
And it, like, it's awesome, but it, like, it made me so mad, right? Like, it really, like, it was wonderful. Like, it was the kind of thing where you're like, oh, this is pushing all of my buttons and I'm loving this experience.
But that's what Joanna does. She takes the whole genre and then she just flips it right upside down. And then she says, now we're going to do this. And it's really magnificent. If you're interested in like reading around the edges of romance, like the, if you're interested in looking at ways like people subvert tropes, Joanna's your person for that. Each one of the novellas in this anthology is loosely based on a famous holiday movie. So Tessa's is Meet Me in St. Louis. Mine is Scrooged.
Nice.
Sophie's is Home Alone and Joanna's is Christmas in Connecticut. So if you're into holiday movies and you're looking for something to read after the book, the movie is over, maybe How the Duke Stole Christmas will be your thing.
It was my thing.
Well, thank you. I'm thrilled to hear that. And Joanna will be too.
All right, everybody. We would love to hear more about your recommended holiday romances and reads. We are always looking for recommendations for future interstitial episodes and things you'd like us to recommend and talk about. Please subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and have a very happy holiday and a wonderful new year.